Okay, we'll bring the Environment and Natural Resources Committee to order. First order of business is approval of the minutes, reapproval of the March 1st minutes. We had to make a change in those minutes. Representative Wagenius brought that to our attention. Do they look in order at this time, Representative Wagenius? Very good. Representative Wagenius moves reapproval of the March 1st meeting. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Those minutes are adopted. Then we'll take up the March 3rd minutes. Representative Pennis moves the March 3rd minutes. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. March 3rd minutes are adopted. We're going to do two bills today, committee members, and both Representative Osmonds. It's going to be the one big bill, the Environment Finance Bill, and we'll move that forward, and then we're going to do a technical bill, DNR technical bill, both carried by Representative Osmond. Representative Osmond, you have House File 1420. Representative Osmond moves House File 1420 to bring it before the committee. Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this bill, I believe, will move to the Agriculture Policy Committee.
Okay.
So, the this is the governor's proposal with regard to the budget overall. The best, I think, for you to, the easiest to follow is to go to the House Research's overview and bill summary. And the first provision to be before this committee is Article 2. And Article 2, which actually starts, I believe, on pages 21 of the bill. And this is covers the funding for the fiscal years for MPCA, the DNR, Minnesota Corps Conservation Corps, Bowser, Met Council, the Zoo Board, and Science Museum. And the in the bill, the several sections that follow are different portions of or changes that the organization or the department has in the governor's proposal has outlined. And you can see through the little headings as to what they cover, the forest trust lands, which pertains to certain trust land management costs to transfer. And we can go through these on an individual basis, Mr. Chair, or we can try to find where people may have some specific questions with regard to what's actually in the bill. The policy issues, the biggest policy issue I think that you'll find in this bill is the moving together of the Office of Environmental Assistance and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency into a new department, and that will be covered Mr. Chair, underneath Article 3, which is the creation of the Department of Environmental Protection. And so the I tried to go through myself and to pick out what I thought were maybe some issues that people would want to have brought to their attention. I really didn't find anything that jumps out at me that has a that we haven't had significant discussion on in one location or another, especially with regard to budget overviews. Other than on, we have on page 46 or 48 of the bill, a provision is calling for a surcharge to be established with regard to some water fees, as well as, I believe, a just ahead of that, some issues on water, and I'd like at this time to bring Mr. Myers from Department of Natural Resources to maybe come up and give us a little description of what that is actually taking place there.
Okay.
Mr. Myers here? There he is.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Bob Meyer, Director of Legislative Affairs for the Department of Natural Resources.
It's on the search for
and what was the specific question?
Just give us a little overview as to what's actually happening.
Mr. Chair, members, this issue was also presented in the DNR budget when we did the division of waters. What we're proposing to do is to do a surcharge of $20 per million gallons that would be used for purposes of doing water sustainability research throughout the state. Also, recently the issue has been brought to us that we need to coordinate this with the Metropolitan Council activities, that they have a bill that they've just introduced to work on that as well. So we're in the process of coordinating with the Met Council to make sure that these two activities line up.
And Mr. Meyer, I think we're going to, that was in government operations today, and I think we're going to be seeing that bill here too.
Jeff, yes. And you want to cover this?
Representative Osmond.
And one other section with regard to the sale of land bordering public waters, the new provision that is in there, and I'd like for that to be described to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, uh-huh. Section 29, found on page 50 of the bill, is language that is also contained in the bill that is before the House and the Senate in this body carried by Representative McNamara, dealing with tax forfeited land sales on public water. Currently, right now, tax forfeited land sales or riparian land sales over 150 feet of lakeshore need to be approved by the legislature. You'll be seeing a tax forfeited land sale bill probably come through this committee. It's in the subcommittee tomorrow night. I would assume it comes back here. What we're proposing to do is take the receipts from those proceeds and deposit them in this account, which would be a subset, if you will, of the water recreation account used specifically for the riparian land area, the shoreland or the lakes associated with the sales of those parcels. Basically, if you want to think of it as a county or an environmental trust fund for the lakes or shoreland riparian areas, similar to what the counties have done when they sold their lease lots, lakeshore lease lots that the DNR had several years ago. Now, many counties, northern Minnesota specifically, have these county environmental trust funds that they use for environmental type issues. What we're proposing is to have this fund created to be used for riparian issues, access improvements, shoreline habitat, invasive species management, working with lakes association, homeowner groups, lake improvement districts, and things of that nature as a funding source for them, dedicated right to the source where it came from.
Other than that, Mr. Chair, I believe the bill is as it's been presented in the governor's budget proposals as they have gone forward. And this, we are also anticipating that there will be some supplemental provisions that will be coming forward, I think, released later today, if not already. And they will be incorporated into this activity also.
Okay. Questions for Representative Osmond or Mr. Meyer? Representative Dill.
Thank you, Chair. On subdivision 3, the sale of lands bordering public waters, Mr. Meyer, isn't presently the money split up 40% school, 40 county, and 20 cities and towns after the expenses of the sale currently?
Mr. Meyer?
Chair, Representative Dill, yes, you can find those provisions outlined in 282.08, outlines the way that the monies are to be distributed, proceeds.
So now, this particular provision, the subdivision 3, then would be taking the money away from the schools, county, and the cities and towns and putting it in a DNR account for them to manage rather than for the counties to manage. Is that correct?
Or Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, the way the language is written does that. We're currently in the process, and actually that's who I was meeting with in the back of the room when I got called on here, and working with the affected parties to try to come up with some language that might be able to work for everybody. The bill that is in the body right now, Representative McNamara is carrying, we're working on some language that people can be supportive of. I know there's some concern by the counties and townships of this language, and we're trying to work with everybody to come up with language that's suitable for everybody.
Sure. Representative Dill?
Well, a statement in my district where land, public land, is the rule rather than the exception. 57% in 59% or so in St. Louis, 89% in Lake, and 91% public ownership. There's a higher propensity for them to have these lakes where there's riparian land, and they have been receiving that revenue. And to now take that would actually be taking the apportionment from their tax forfeited lands that they've been managing. And at some point in time, I don't think they got anything previously. And now in recently, or somewhat recent, they received this split. I don't know. Doesn't sound like a good thing for my counties.
Mr. Chair, just on the general concept, the issue came about based upon the needs that are out there for shoreland development protection and also other riparian funding sources. And also, some places of the state were seeing these lands being sold because of short-term needs, not looking at the long-term environmental protection needs of the areas. We do understand the concerns, especially in northern Minnesota, relating to this provision, and we're trying to come up with something that is amenable to everybody.
Representative Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Osmond, I'm not 100% sure on Article 3, the Department of Environmental Protection is created, and I'm not familiar with how long the PCA and the OEA have been in existence and stuff, but this is pretty much blending the two agencies together, and they'll still keep doing what they're doing, but they'll just be under a common sort of umbrella. And elsewhere in here it indicates, you know, there's no reductions or employees losing jobs and all this. So this is just basically a streamlining deal.
Representative Osmond.
Mr. Chair, Representative it is. It's both from an efficiency standpoint, there are some small savings with regard to duplicative administrative services that can be commingled. But the real crux of the activity is to try and get these organizations working together. One is being more focused on prevention type of activities. The other one is more regulatory. And this is kind of along the concepts that I described in the past as like we have with the fire service, where you have three separate organizations. One's putting out the fires. One is regulating fire codes. The other one is educating people on how to not have fires in the first place. But they all work underneath the same administration, same head, so they all have the same goals and missions that are, and when there is disagreement as to how to best carry out the issues, carry forward the issues, they can work them out internally within their organizations and go forward in, as one unit. Mm-hmm. And so this is really what we're trying to accomplish here, is to get lower the confusion that we have sometimes out there in the with our citizens as to kind of who's in charge of what, and we want these organizations to coordinate better.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Representative Pennis.
Thank you, Mr.
Was your
Chair.
Question for Mr. Meyer? Do you want him to come back up?
Back, I think, to Representative Deal's concern, and I have the same concern. You alluded to there was some accounts with the northern counties. They're already setting up to do some of this work. And so my questions are, why is what is happening not working? Number two, would it not be better for the local people to try and get a hold of this and solve the problem without going through a state bureaucracy and then back where the commissioner then can let out grants, because they're supposed to go to the same vicinity. And then also the other entities that get a portion of this now have taken up some of these of the work that needs to be done. So is it broken? Do we need to fix it? And if so, do we have to go through a state bureaucracy to fix it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pennis, to the first part of your question, we are seeing the needs out there throughout the state, one, for the financial resources at the local level, and two, that some places, when they're putting these lands up for sale, are doing it for, as I mentioned before, for the short-term gain, not looking at the long-term environmental protection needed in the area. The second part of your question, it deals with where the money would be deposited and how it would be dealt with. That's exactly one of the proposals that we're looking at, is having this fund be established at the county level. So there would be a county tax forfeited riparian land account that the county board would be able to utilize and fund the local resources and the programs at that level. There's also a bill right now going through the process that deals with the county environmental trust funds that would allow them to be deposited with the state board of investment. That would be another option that's on the table, I think. Putting the money in that fund that the counties have, if they don't have a fund established, having them establish that fund to allow it to be invested and use the interest. Right now, they're allowed to be used the interest off of that fund for environmental, for a list of purposes. What we're trying to get at, though, is to have One of the things the department looks at very closely and takes very seriously is fund integrity. Where the money is generated from, we want the money to be spent on those purposes. To have the money generated from the sales of these parcels go back into the immediate vicinity of the land, the lake, for improvement protection activities.
Yeah, one follow-up. And I know that there are counties that will take tax forfeit land and sell it out, or sell it to the highest bidder, and the county makes some money and we get private ownership, and we can work with private people as well as the DNR. Probably better. Anyway, but it's, you referred to short-term gain. Now, the land that we are talking about here, land bordering public waters, do we not have to have agreement on the part of the county and the DNR on, like, the land subcommittee that we're going to have meeting now tomorrow night, in order for these lands to be sold to start with? So counties are limited, or townships or whatever.
Ms. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pennis. The legislative approval requirement is are only for shorelines, right, lands that are over 150 feet. Anything less than 150 feet of shoreline, the counties have the ability to sell without approval. Yes.
Same deal.
Can we change to Section 30?
Hold on a second. Representative Hansen, was that your question to this issue? Or?
Mine was on the OEA version.
Okay. Representative Dill.
Okay. Can we look at Section 30? It's on page 50 of the bill. And this regards tilt. And it's certainly an issue for counties that have high indexes of public land, particularly land that receives PIL payments. It appears to me that this bill, this language, freezes the payments. And I'm really not happy about that, because the value of the lands are escalating tremendously. Counties are going to opt, those who can opt, to the 0.75% each, I think it's every 5 years, they are going to opt to that, because this is going to be their last chance to do so, and that's going to shrink the pot for the people who are receiving the 75 cents or roughly there, or 30 to 40 cents an acre. It's going to shortchange everyone, and I just don't understand how that we can continue to acquire public land, which I really, in most instances, support, but not pay our own real estate taxes. I mean, if all the members of this body, I don't see that we could vote to freeze our own real estate taxes here very practically. And lastly, and then you can hammer away on what I've said, this is in St. Louis County. I think we have about 950,000 or so acres of tax forfeit land, somewhere in that neighborhood. And one of the things I saw in the Duluth paper and the Minneapolis paper in this last week was this huge crisis that we're going into, that relative to public access, and that Boise land, 309,000 acres, was bought by a TMO, and that MP is selling their land, and how it's fracturing and dividing all of these interests, and more cabins are being built. This bill is actually an incentive. This portion of the bill is an incentive for the counties that have a lot of tax forfeit land to sell the land and fracture it even more, and even hurt the public interest more of public access, so that they can get the land back on the tax base. Because you, in this bill, you've essentially, as I understand it, and yet to be corrected, have frozen their, proposed to freeze their PILT payments indefinitely.
Ms. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, I will try to deal with some of your questions on a general level. More specific questions, I'd like to pull up Mr. Paul Poljar from the Lands and Minerals Division if we need to go there. First of all, we do understand the concerns you have with the PILT payments and the language that's in the bill. We do have some language that we would like to see put in the bill, that instead of this, what we would do is basically make the 2007 PILT payment identical to the 2006 payments, so that switching that you talk about, I think, would be avoided. The counties will receive the same amount that they received in fiscal year 06 for fiscal year 07. The PILT program, in many ways, or in some ways, I should say, is kind of like the the issues we're seeing in healthcare and other rising costs of our budget. The way the programs are outlined, tied to property values and the dramatic increases we've seen in property values in the past decade or so, really leads to kind of a plateau, and it levels off, then it increases again. And it, at some point in time, it's going to just, the line will go straight up. So we're trying to figure out how to deal with that, and we're going to need to have some continuing discussions about how do we do that, how do we maintain the property tax base for the counties, how do we maintain access, how do we incentivize counties to keep that land on the tax rolls or off of the tax rolls. Many times these lands aren't developable or they have a very limited value. So there's a number of complicated issues that need to be dealt with, and this was the administration's way of trying to get their arms around the issue, at least right now.
Representative Dill.
Well, then I understand if we did do the 07 arrangement that you just referenced, then that would fix the problem until 5 years from then, in 2012, because then we're going to see doubling of the property values, and the counties will be left holding the bag, and it will incentivize them to sell the land, fracture the ownership, and have more problems with access, more problem in feeding our mills with wood, and it'll just escalate until we basically at some point have very little resources that are left on public lands. And that's really tough on us in counties that are, I mean, the northern counties, Maxine and Irv and myself, and those are, and Solberg and Rukavina, that's just torture on us.
Representative Pennis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have to just add that I have a genuine problem in answering to my constituents when they say, how can you at one point freeze tilt payments and on the other point you have so many million that you're going to buy more state land? And as with health care and many other things, we need to identify how much is sustainable for us to own and how much can we pay for, and maybe we need to think of a, you know, some kind of wildlife containment costs or something. I don't know. I'm not against owning land and all that, but how do we rate with the rest of the states? You know, maybe we should look at that. These are some ideas that if we don't address them, our future legacy generations will be.
Representative.
Well, the other thing that, again, I'm back to this point of having high indexes of public land. You know, I understand there are counties that have, some counties have less than 1% of public land. So they have the tax base in the counties that are 1% or some very small percent. And when you look up at what we have in the boreal forest area, we have a lot of tax forfeit land. And that is also the land that people come up and recreate on from the same place that they don't have any public land. I mean, if you go out in the woods in St. Louis County, you're going to find at least as many hunters, and somebody will refute this, but at least as many hunters or sportsmen or fishermen that are using those public lands from my own district as the people who are from the areas that have almost no public land. So this is not acceptable to the counties that have these high indexes. This isn't going to work.
Well, Representative Dillon, Representative Pence, maybe you can work on this Section 2, Article 2, Section 29 and 30 with the DNR and Representative Osment, maybe you can come up with some better language or something. This bill's got a long way to go, and we'll be hearing this again in the Finance Committee. So with that, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Osment, on page 53, the Department of Environmental Protection creation, and there's a provision talking about, you know, protection for employees in the classified service, and I'm aware that when there have been mergers before with state agencies, there's been some statutory guidance trying to make sure that there's some protection there, and I'm just wondering if this language is similar to what's been there before relating to when there have been state agency mergers.
We got somebody from MPCA to come down. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kathy Berg-Moger, and I'm the director of the Technology, Education, and Assistance Division in the Pollution Control Agency. Representative, yes, that is similar to language that was used most recently in the merger between economic security and trade. And so we've basically taken that similar language and used it here.
Take care of
that's what I need to know.
Okay. Any further questions? Representative Hansen?
I had a question on a different subject relating to the Minnesota Conservation Corps. And
where's that in the bill, Representative Hansen?
That was I think it was under on page 33. And my purpose for asking the question is in my previous employment, I was aware that when there was the change from the Minnesota Conservation Corps being employees of DNR and went to the Friends of Minnesota Conservation Corps, their licensing requirements stayed the same in terms of their knowledge, pesticide applicator licensing requirements. So when they're doing work out in the field, they needed to still be licensed. But their fees went up from paying $10 to paying $75. And I think that there's a cost that, for no fault of their own, that has, when there's a budget cut that's occurring there, that there may be an opportunity to save dollars when the state is putting in $490,000, that we may be able to reduce some of those costs. And I think there's someone from the Conservation Corps here, Representative Osmond, that, and I did talk to your staff about it as well, that may be able to just demonstrate that, and we could try to get that taken care of before it, on its next step of the bill.
If you have
Representative Osmond.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, do you have any language that you'd like us to consider?
I did talk with the Department of Agriculture, with the pesticide applicator folks, and I think we can work something out for the next stop.
Okay, Mr. Chair, you can take testimony if you care to, although I think that this is a very appropriate issue for us to address. There's no reason to take it out of one pocket and put it in the other. If we have costs that this organization is actually confronted with as they're trying to work for the state of Minnesota on different projects.
Representative Osmond, I think we'll have them come down and give a brief explanation, if you don't mind. MTC could come down. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
My name is Rolf Hagberg. I'm the development director for the Minnesota Conservation Corps. The situation is that we have a $75 licensing fee. Our year of our corps members is split. The licensing fee is on an annual basis that is $75 in the fall when our corps members come on, and then if we want to do work in the spring, it's another $75. So it really comes out to about a $150 per corps member charge per year, which is about $9,000 over the course of the year. So that's the statistic.
Anything else, Representative Hansen?
I'll work with folks to try to get that resolved.
Okay. Representative Pennis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is that a one-year permit or a three-year permit?
It's a one. Representative. It's a one-year permit.
Well, Chair Hackworth, is this different than the pesticide permit I get for farm application, which is a three-year permit? It is.
Representative Hansen.
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's Hackberg? Hagberg, sorry. Excuse me. I didn't want to refer to you by your first name. If you could put on the record, how much state funding did you get 3 years ago compared to this $500,000?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, we received $840,000, $490,000 of dedicated funds and $350,000 of the general funds.
Thank you.
Okay. Per year. Governor Scalzi.
I guess I've got a question, and it's back onto the OEA and the PCA merger.
Thank you, Mr. Hagberg.
Thank you.
And I'm wondering, Representative Osmond, is this because of funding? Is this because of the SCORE funding? Because, frankly, it doesn't make sense to me to have to merge two departments, PCA as a regulatory body, and it would appear to me to be a conflict of interest to be merged with a body that is to assist people who have problems. I just don't know that the PCA would come out of this without being somewhat compromised.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, I think the MPCA and others can speak to this issue. I don't see the conflict of interest because we have organizations do this all the time. We have regulatory activities in the police department, and they also have prevention efforts and educational efforts that go forward. We have the same thing in code enforcement with regard to fire departments all across the state. So it's a matter of internal structure as to how you prevent the conflicts of interest to occur. But for efficiency of operation, getting them all on the same message, this seems to be a very logical approach. But I'll let the OEA or MPCA speak to the issue of conflict of interest directly.
Welcome back.
Mr. Chair, members, Kathy Moger. In my division already in the Pollution Control Agency, I have a small business assistance program, and specifically those folks are there for assistance purposes. And basically because we have a divisional separation of the prevention and assistance activities from the regulatory activities, that's enough of a firewall to even meet the federal standard that's required. This legislation, because the intent of the agency is to basically merge the prevention and assistance activities with our existing prevention and assistance activities in the two departments, that firewall, as you will stay. But what this does offer is the ability to work within the regulatory programs as they identify issues in compliance or elsewhere to more better target our prevention and assistance activities and take advantage of opportunities that might be offered.
Does that take care of it for you, Representative Stone?
Not really, but I can understand the answer.
Thank you, Ms. Moger. Representative Mariani.
Well, Mr. Chair, on that point.
Ms. Moger.
Thank you. Sorry, I should have spoke up earlier. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mariani.
On that point, I've not been approached by anyone in the departments on this policy change issue. Has this been vetted through a public process? I know sometimes departments will engage key stakeholders around the state, and if so, what has been the response from both business and environmental protection watchdog groups to the proposal?
Mr. Chair and Representative, we have been talking about this for a number of years. The counties are the ones that have indicated the most concern, but we've spent the last couple of years, and particularly the last summer, where Commissioner Corrigan, Cheryl Corrigan, and Director Art Dunn specifically went out and talked to stakeholders about this issue to understand their concerns. The primary issue that we heard was about stabilizing the funding, particularly in the SCORE area. And so as part of this proposal, you'll see the stabilization of funding by putting 70% of the solid waste tax into the environmental fund, specifically to address that concern.
Anything further, Representative Moran? This issue has been around for a number of years. We've been trying to work this out for quite some time, and I'm glad to see that we can finally do it this year. Thank you, Ms. Moger. Okay, members, I have the JH-44 amendment. It's my amendment that authorizes the Board of Water and Soil Resources to take care of this project up at Camp Ripley of acquiring, what do we want to call it, easements around the Camp Ripley area to create this buffer project, and it would give the authority to the Board of Water and Soil Resources to do that, much like a PREP program or something like that. They're used to handling this sort of thing, so we want to insert this into the bill. I think Representative Osmond's aware of this issue, and it just gives them authority to handle the project. Any questions on the amendment? All in favor of the JH 44 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment's adopted. Any further discussion? Anyone from the audience would like to speak for or against the bill? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Dan Larson, representing today the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus, and I just want to reiterate concerns that our organization has with sections 29 and 30 of the bill, which the committee spent a little time on today. So we, at this point, are on the riparian land piece. I was glad to hear that the department is entered into discussions and open to further discussions. On the payment in lieu of taxes, I can't emphasize enough, and I think Representative Dill put it best, that in terms of paying your property taxes, these are lands that the state pays to keep public. And at this point, with land valuations increasing and continuing pressure on those public lands, it's very important that we don't move that we move cautiously in any regard to cap payments on TILT. The inflation factor that we put into place in the year 2000 seems to be working quite well, and I would just leave the committee with those thoughts and sentiments.
Any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. Any further discussion?
Mr. Phil.
Representative Mariani.
I'm sorry, is there someone else who's going to testify? Well, Mr. Chair, if you're going to take a vote on this, I'd ask for a roll call at this point.
Okay. Roll call having been requested. Okay, Representative Osmond. I'm sorry. Representative Osmond renews his motion that House File 1420, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Agriculture and Rural Development Committee.
Mr. Chair?
Representative McNamara.
I've got a question, Mr. Chair, in regards to, I think it's on page 51. I'm wondering if the Department of Ag has showed up yet. They weren't here at the beginning of the meeting.
Page 51?
I believe. I might have my wrong page number. It was the nursery. Wasn't it on page 51? Sorry. It's the nursery fee structure. 13. Well, it's close to 51. You multiply it by 4 and strike 1.
Page 13.
Just wondering if either the author or somebody from Department of Ag, I just want to confirm something.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Craig Bazicki. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bazicki, I just want to confirm, has the industry been involved in the creation of the new structure here on lines 5 through 19, page 13?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, yes. We've been working with them quite closely. And they have been involved in this, and they do support this. That's it's been a joint effort.
Thank you. McNamara?
No, that's it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Tingleton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question on page 53, and I apologize if I missed this earlier. I guess I knew that the change of the name of the Pollution Control Agency was going to be effective. I think this is the first bill maybe we've seen through this committee that talks about it, and to see that it's going to be called Environmental Protection, and I'm just looking for an effective date on the bill. Guessing is it August 1st, that name change. I'm just curious how that's going to work, and I don't know if there's somebody here from the PCA. I have a question about how that works nationally, if there's any relevance to what's going on in other states or federally.
Ms. Mulgrew, do you have any answers for Representative Tingleton?
Mr. Chair and Representative Tingle said. Actually, when we looked at this name, we did look at what other combined departments with the same types of activities were called in other states. And then we did a stakeholder outreach effort a few years ago where we tested those names and found out what people's preferences were, and this was the preference.
And so how would this be implemented as far as administratively within the agency?
Our goal is to do this with as little cost as possible. Pretty much the only direct outlay that we're expecting is to change the sign in front of our building, which is currently 520 Lafayette. The idea is that we'll phase in the purchase of letterhead with that name and so forth so that we actually use up our existing stocks before we move into the new department.
Thank you.
Any further discussion for MPCA? Thank you, Representative Osmond.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to encourage support for House File 1420 to be moved on to the next committee. This is the governor's proposal, so it contains all the funding requests with regard to everything from the different agencies and departments that we talked about today, including Science Museum, the zoo, Metropolitan Parks, many different types of funding mechanisms here. They're very critical for the operation of government that needs to go forward, so I encourage your support.
Okay. Representative Osmond, if you don't mind, I'm going to call Mr. Meyer back up. Mr. Meyer, welcome back. You talked about Representative McNamara's bill being in this bill when it came to the riparian lands issue. Are there other bills that we've been hearing along the way that have been rolled into this bill? I think there's some other issues that were put into this bill that are also traveling as separate bills.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, DNR. There's several other bills and pieces of other bills that have been added in here, as is the usual case when the budget bill is presented. Bills that we have that have fiscal impacts as well as policy impacts are moving on a dual track right now. So as they come out of the policy committee, they'll go to the environment committee for possible inclusion in the omnibus budget bill. I can get the committee a list of those if they would like, or we can. It'll take me a few minutes to go through each section and identify them.
I was just wondering if there was something in specific that was in the bill that, you know, some other big bills that might be rolled into this.
Mr. Chair, members, I think the ones that we covered in testimony today were the major ones that have any or the most fiscal or impacts on other stakeholders. Okay. Other ones, the statutory accounts that we've talked about, creating statutory accounts, they're in here. There'll be some ELS language sprinkled throughout the bill, okay. Things of that nature.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, Representative Osmond renews his motion in House Bill 1420 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the Agriculture and Rural Development Committee. Clerk will take the roll.
Hackbarth?
Aye.
Cox?
Aye.
Lane?
Aye.
Cornish?
Aye.
Dill?
Aye.
Kelleher? Hansen?
No.
Hoppy?
Aye.
Portman?
No.
Mariani?
No.
McNamara?
Aye.
Nornes?
Aye.
Osmond?
Aye.
Hennis?
Aye.
Hoppy?
No.
Scalzi?
No.
Tinglestead?
Aye.
Wagenius? Welty?
Yeah.
Westrom?
Yes.
There being 13 ayes and 7 nays, the bill is passed as amended and re-referred to the Ag. Ag and Rural Development Committee. Motion prevails. Representative Osmond, you have another bill, House File 1081. Representative Osmond moves House File 1081, and be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Government Operations and Veterans Affairs Committee.
Yeah.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is a DNR technical bill. Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment that I'd like to put on as an author's amendment.
That's the 1098A1 amendment?
A1 amendment.
Representative Osmond moves the 1098A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that he'd like. Representative Osmond.
Mr. Chair, I did have one oral correction or change to make on that amendment.
Okay.
Just after line 8, I want to repeat kind of line 8, so it would say page 3, line, instead of and insert 28, and delete non-native and insert invasive. That makes that the next paragraph consistent with the change that we're making in that first one. This is a correction of language is all it is to match this. So it'd be adding in just after line 8, page 3, line 28, delete non-native and insert invasive.
Mr. Helen, do you have that?
Yes, I got it.
Okay. We'll incorporate that in the amendment.
I will.
Mr. Chair, to that point.
Representative Thingelstadt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, it looks like the amendment is written to the Senate file, and it looks like line 1 probably needs to be updated, and I'm just wondering about, does everything else fit then into the House file, the way it's organized?
Mr. Helen?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we should make that correction. It was amendment amends House File 1081.
Thank you.
Okay. We're all square. Representative Loginius. To the amendment.
If I could, Mr. Chair, Representative Osmond, and two things I have. As I understand it, you've changed from non-native to invasive. Is that correct in this amendment? And I
we're matching up Representative Loginius with the Senate language. And that's the intent of this amendment. And I, as far as the explanation of the amendment, Mr. Myers would need to explain.
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loginius, the amendment that we're looking at will fit in on page 3, which defines the purposes of the water recreation account and what those funds in that account can be appropriated for or used for. And what we're trying to do will be to allow those funds to be used for the management of aquatic invasive species and also the implementation of Chapter 84D, which is aquatic invasives, as it pertains to those species.
Representative Guinness.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The reason I ask the question is we often don't know when we plant non-natives whether they're going to be invasive or not. I mean, we sometimes get a very unhappy surprise. Buckthorn is an unhappy surprise. So non-native is broader and I think more protective than invasive because oftentimes we just don't know. So that pulling back is troubling to me. And I hope we can have a longer discussion of that at some point, and I hope the chair will think about that because too many things that we have planted as non-native have become invasive and with no bad intention on anybody's part.
Representative Osmond.
And Representative Wiggins will certainly take that into consideration as we move forward. I think what we're trying to do now is just to match up with the language that's in Chapter 84D, so this language would be consistent with existing law.
Okay, Representative Osmond moves Amendment 1098A-1. You get the bill in the shape that he'd like. All as amended. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. Motion prevails. Amendments adopted. Representative Osmond, on your bill.
Mr. Myers will walk us through. Or is this a technical bill?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chair, members, once again, for the record, Bob Meyer, DNR Legislative Affairs Director. The bill before you today contains several provisions of a technical nature that the DNR would like to amend in statute. Section 1 deals with commercial fishing and turtle frog and crayfish harvesting restrictions in infested and non-infested waters. Last year we did have a bill that dealt with these issues and this is to correct an oversight in that bill. The language that's before you today corrects the language that was passed last session that would allow a commercial fishing operator to move nets from one infested water to another. The problem that we have, that we have now, is that this would allow an operator to move a net from a Eurasian milfoil lake to one that would be infested perhaps with zebra mussels or some other invasive species or macrophytes. We want to make sure that if you're using a set of nets in one body of water, that before you move that into any other body of water, that you contacted us and that they're identified and freezed or dried properly. So the technical changes that you'll see will prevent commercial fishing operations from transferring different invasive species between infested waters. That section one takes it to page one and into page two. The bottom of page two establishes the water recreation account. This change will make in statute consistent with practice. The account exists in the state treasury and has been used for many years. However, there is no language actually on the books that establishes this account. So that section one does that. Section two of the bill does that, subdivision one. Subdivision two lists the sources of receipts and other revenues that were deposited, that will be deposited or that are deposited into the water recreation account. Subdivision three will list the purposes of those accounts or those monies. And you can see we've also amended that to include on page four of subdivision three of line 27. It now reads for management of aquatic non-natives and the implementation of Chapter 84D as it pertains to aquatic invasive species. I'm sorry, it's invasive on the other line too. We also add a number five in here to allow for management of aquatic plants and implementation of Section 103G.615, which relates to aquatic plant management. And as it pertains to aquatic plants, including plant removal permitting, control, public awareness, law enforcement, assessment and monitoring, management planning, and research. The last provision of the bill, which I'll get to in a moment, does also take the permitting fees, these aquatic plant management permit fees, that are currently being deposited into the Game and Fish Fund and deposits them into the water recreation account. So when we do these activities, we are no longer drawing funds from one source or another source, i.e. the water rec account or the Game and Fish Fund. We want to make sure we're pulling the money from one account and it makes more sense to be using it from the water recreation account rather than the Game and Fish Fund. It's a fund integrity issue that we're trying to implement there. Section 3 of the bill, the actual change that we're seeking is on page 5. This deals with the Game and Fish Budget Oversight Committee, which is established in statute. As many other advisory councils, that all advisory councils and committees are in statute, they have a sunset date. This committee is set to sunset, or these committees, I should say, are set to sunset June 30th of 2005. We're seeking to extend that date by 5 years to 2010. It's also our position that these committees are unlike any other advisory committees that are established in state statute. They provide direct correspondence and oversight of all of our game and fish accounts. We do take all of our funding issues to these committees. They are staffed or appointed by the current president is Rick Horton, works for the Rough Grouse Society. We also have members from Pheasants Forever, Deer Hunters Association, Trout Unlimited, and all other Wild Turkey Federation, all other interest groups that are there. The Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy works on an eco-services subcommittee to really oversee and guide the department as they relate to expenditures and development of budgetary items to bring before this body. So we're looking to continue their work in this bill. Section 4 of the bill deals with the Lifetime License Annual Report. This section modifies certain contents of the annual report of the Lifetime Fish and Wildlife Trust Fund. The change removes the requirement to describe the game and fish projects, project location, results, and benefits of the specific projects funded with the money transferred annually from the Lifetime License Trust Fund. Since the money isn't tracked separately, it's commingled into the Game and Fish Fund, it makes it basically impossible for this to be done. We could say that we spent X number of dollars on these activities, and those numbers, that amount came from the lifetime licenses. But rather than do that, we would just deal with it in the annual report on the Game and Fish Funds that talks about all of our expenditures and programmatic activities there. Section 5 of the bill, Sections 5 and 6 of the bill deal with county forest development projects. Currently in statute, counties are required to request approval from the Department of Spending county timber receipts for county forest development projects. What we're trying to do here is match actual practice with the law. Rarely, if ever, is this done. Counties are spending the money on consistent projects with statute, and we feel that this level of oversight is no longer necessary, and it makes it consistent with current practice. The last section, Section 7 of the bill, will strike the word state park development from the purposes of the water rec account, or purposes of the use for the water rec account. It's our intention that the current phrase state park development is too broad of a descriptor in setting the parameters for the uses or the purpose of spending from the water recreation account. The language that is in there was intended for the development and maintenance of water access sites within state parks, and those expenditures are currently and will remain an authorized expenditure out of the water recreation account. So we're just trying to tighten that up and have it lined up more closely with what we have. Section 8 of the bill deals with aquatic plant management fees, which is in the amendment that we just passed. And this provision modifies where the fees are collected, where the fees collected for aquatic plant management permits are deposited. As I mentioned previously, we're trying to unify that funding source to make it easier to track and identify for our budgetary purposes and also for the purposes of the legislature. Mr. Chair, that is the bill.
Any questions? Representative Wagenius.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Osmond, I come back to worrying a little bit about this non-native thing and wonder if you would consider, not going to make it as an amendment, but if you might, instead of just saying invasive, say non-native or invasive. Because what could happen is a DNR specialist out there could say, I'm worried about this. It hasn't become invasive yet, but I'm worried about this non-native plant. And it could explode on me in terms of seed. But it would not yet be classified as an invasive. I worry is we're limiting too much to say just invasive.
Mr. Chair, to this point, Representative Wagenius brings up some good information, and maybe DNR's had a staff change, but last year I raised those very exact same questions, and they had good answers, and the name of the gentleman that I worked with escapes me now, but we do need to hear some testimony for why the certain words are used. They're consistent, I believe, across the nation is what it's about.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent.
Mr. Chairman, members, Steve Hirsch, DNR Ecological Services, and Mr. Chairman and Representative Wagenius, Representative McNamara is correct. The term invasive species is becoming increasingly used on the federal level, and we've been trying to shift over to that terminology. We've changed a number of statutes regarding when what was formerly often referred to as exotic species are referred to now. If you look in the statutory language, they're referred to as invasive species. And what we do is we categorize them as prohibited, regulated, or unregulated. And depending on that categorization, then the activities that you can or can't do become stricter as it becomes, from unregulated to regulated and prohibited. The reason that non-native has kind of grown out of favor, at least as common terminology, is because we have some non-native species that are not invasive and are considered desirable, and so people have started to, at least the people that work in this program, have started to shy away from utilizing that, although you still hear all the terms kind of used interchangeably because we have used a number of them over the years.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wasn't suggesting getting rid of the word invasive. I was suggesting that we have both words, not getting rid of the word invasive, but having both of them so that you have the opportunity to anticipate a problem of a non-native.
Anything further?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, the only thing I would add is that this invasive terminology has been used now throughout state statutes where that terminology is referred to. And so if we did it here, it wouldn't be consistent where it's used in other places. And the only other thing I would add is I think the ability to address the species isn't so much tied up in the terminology as it is in what we end up classifying it as. So if it's a prohibited invasive species, then we've got a lot of laws to back up prohibiting people from possessing that and releasing it into the wild. It's regulated the same. If it's unregulated, and it's because we don't know enough about it, which is kind of the case that you're alluding to, what we need to do is do the risk assessment on it, get more information on it, and then see if it should be classified as a regulated or a prohibited invasive species. So I think, if I'm understanding you correctly, that's what really drives our ability to deal with it in terms of treating it as something that we don't want to see spread.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if, Mr. Meyer, I've got a question. The first part of this Section 1 dealt with the bill I carried last year, and I'm just curious to know. It brings up a couple of thoughts. This bill, and you said possibility of somebody doing something wrong, and then I think of when we made the change on CWD with the deer hunters, and we ended up making a bunch of people mad and some people in my business a lot poorer because they weren't allowed to do their business. What my question really is, flexibility for the department. When you see something like this happen, our intent, we were trying to control the movement of the, we didn't want stuff moving from one infested water into a new situation. Does the department have the flexibility to say, wait a minute, just because technically you could take it from infested milfoil to that little crayfish or whatever, how do you deal with situations when they pop up like that? So when we do something too quick, maybe it ends up looking like it's a real problem.
Mayor?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, each situation is going to be a little bit different. They're dealt with on a case-by-case basis based on the enforcement actions, and I think, you know, Representative Cornish could help me if I'm wrong on that. But as we deal with the situations at hand, you know, depending on how serious the violation is, it can range from, you know, just discussion and a little bit of education, which often goes a long way and solves the problem, or if we need to go into an enforcement-type activity, we would need to change this language in order to be able to do that, because right now what we did last year was create an inadvertent loophole.
Mr. Chair, follow up. My question is, did you have any instances in the last year that, or did just this something somebody saw this as a potential?
I can bring Steve Hirsch on again, Assistant Director for Ecological Services, to answer that correctly.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the committee. You heard the question?
Yes, I did. Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, we're not aware of any specific instances where this has become a problem, so it's more of the latter. We're just trying to fix the language so that we're not allowing something that could potentially spread invasive species.
And so that if, thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I understood Mr. Meyer's answer, then would your hands potentially be tied where you wouldn't be able to do anything because we may have acted wrong, or you feel you have flexibility where you would be able to react to it?
Mr. Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman and Representative McNamara, I think that we'd have flexibility in terms of being able to work with the commercial fishing operator if we felt that that person was doing something that could potentially spread an invasive species. We've worked pretty well with them, and they've been fairly cooperative. However, with the, you know, we don't have the safeguard to prevent it from happening. We can't say that it's against the way the current language is now. We can't say that it's against the law for somebody to take a net from the Mississippi River, for example, and move it to a lake that's got Eurasian water milfoil. So that's what we're trying to avoid.
Thank you.
Representative Osmond.
I'd like to follow up on Representative Wagenius' question with the inquiry myself. Representative Wagenius says, I'm looking at that particular section, and it's authorizing on page 3 up at line 10, it authorizes the money in the account may be expended only as appropriated by law for the following purposes. And so then when we go down to line 27, if we included non-native there, it could mean we would be then authorizing money to be spent on aquatic species that are not invasive or really not causing a problem. Why would we want to do that?
What?
Yeah. So we'll get you.
I'm trying to track what you're trying to protect us from, and I see that leaving non-native there really kind of expands the potential for authorization for appropriating money on things that really are not invasive or not a problem, even though they may be non-native, and that might not be what we'd prefer, or some may not like to prefer, but it's really not a danger to the rest of the aquatic wildlife or the habitat. Why would we want to expand it? And I'm sure you have a reason. So
Representative Guinness.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Osmond, the problem is that we are, I think, DNR, all folks of goodwill. Everybody is of goodwill. We sometimes have non-natives that do not seem to be invasive, and then all of a sudden they'll take off on us. And I worry that because if we have to go through some rulemaking or have to do a declaration, that somebody in the field might say, I am worried about this, it's not a native species, let's just take this out because I see it has a lot of seed with it and I am worried about it. Now, if it were a native species, then I wouldn't be worried about it because the native is, by nature, is not going to be invasive. It's just we don't know some things I wish we knew. That's all. It's not bad from being bad. It's sometimes you just don't know until it happens.
Representative Osmond?
Chair and Representative Guinness, we don't have to conclude as to how we'll handle this right at this moment, but to me, to address that issue, we may want to consider at including something like or potentially invasive. So because non-native is such a broad category and brings in so many things that we really shouldn't be worried about or spending money on or authorizing people to appropriate money on. But the concern that you're expressing, I think maybe we can address that in another fashion. I'd like to work on that.
Any further discussion? Representative Tinglestad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I'm just seeing the A1 amendment today, and I know I have a constituent who does aquatic plant management for a business, and I'm going to run some stuff by him, but I'm wondering if there's maybe anybody in the audience from the Minnesota Lakes Association or if there's been some comments on this from outside groups.
Anyone from the audience that would like to testify for the bill? Come on down. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gary Botzik for the Minnesota Lakes Association. Representative Tinglestad, that's the first I've seen of the amendment today as well. I don't have any problem with it, but I think we need to look at it further and see if it needs any further clarification.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, where is this bill going to next?
Your committee.
Galas? Okay. Thank you. We'll look at it there. Thanks.
Thank you. Further discussion. Any further testimony from the audience? Representative Osmond renews his motion that House File 1081 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations and Veterans Affairs. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. Motion prevail. Bill is passed and sent to GovOps.
Thank you,
Mr. Representative Osmond. Members, what are we doing? When do we meet tomorrow? Subcommittee on Lands meets tomorrow. Yep. Representative Cornish is the chair, and Representative Dillon and Representative Tennis are going to be on that. Meets at 4:30 tomorrow in room 400 North. 400 North at 4:30 tomorrow. And then on Thursday, this committee, we don't really have it planned yet. We'll have a number of bills before us. And not really scheduled yet. But members, I want to tell you that we did make the trip to Camp Ripley. It was a very, very successful trip. It was wonderful. Wish that more of you could have attended. Some of the committee members do have pictures of the trip and meeting at the bear den and pulling the bears out of the den and checking them all out. And the scientists were all there. It was a wonderful, wonderful time. So sorry more of you couldn't make it. With that, members, anything else that you want to bring before the committee? Meeting adjourned.